most of your Walt Disney World vacation.
Our top six memories from Extraterrestrial Alien Encounter. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 84 of the World of Walt podcast. Make the most of your Walt Disney World vacation for the week of August 7th, 2016. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans, whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. Today's podcast is sponsored by Ear to Their Travel. If you're planning a trip to any Disney destination, give Phil at Ear to Their Travel a call. Phil is a former Disney cast member who knows how Disney works, and he can help you plan all the details of your trip at no extra cost to you while making sure you get the best deal on your vacation. You can reach Phil at eartotheirtravel.com. It replaced Mission to Mars, and it delighted some guests and terrified others from 1995 to 2003. During the show, you had a chance to see an amazing demonstration by XS Technology of a new teleportation tech, which, like in so many Disney stories, leads to something a little bit unexpected. Today, we're going to take a look at the top six memories from Extraterrestrial Alien Encounter. I knew I wouldn't be able to say that. And to help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome a guy who is rarely frightened by aliens, Phil Gramlich. Phil, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me back. And you did fine. You didn't stumble over that word too bad.
Yeah, it's only got 12 syllables in it. Extraterrestrial.
Yeah, not easy to say.
Maybe that's part of the reason why it's not here anymore. It was just too hard to pronounce.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's number one. That's the reason.
We'll see if that makes it into our top six.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, right. Well, thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Good to have you here. All right, so before we get to the aliens, warm-up question for you, which is, what is your favorite moment in Festival of the Lion King?
Favorite moment? So, this is going to be moments, but it's not just a quick moment, but the tumble monkeys, I think, are my favorite part of the show. What those guys can do with the bars, the parallel bars, and then jump on that trampoline and land it on each other's shoulders like that. It's incredible. It's such a cool thing. And I've never seen them mess up. It's amazing.
Yeah. They're amazing athletes, really. And they really put a lot of energy into it. A lot of fun.
Yeah, they really do. I just think, that's the best part of the show every single time. The singers are all fantastic, obviously, but that's a really cool part of that show.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites as well. One of the things I really like about the Festival of the Lion King is when they get some kids and they march them around the stage in the round. I have seen several times kids that are just having the time of their life. There was one show I saw where there was a little girl in a wheelchair, and I mean, she was just on top of the world in that moment that she was part of the show, and I just thought this is one of the reasons why Disney has such a place in so many people's hearts, because it can create these family experiences for folks. And I think that's a moment where that happens in that show, where they bring kids in and they march them around and they're just having the time of their lives.
Yeah, Disney does do that amazingly well. And that's, it's a show that you wouldn't really expect it, because there's so many moving parts and there's so much going on in that show that you would think, oh man, there's not a whole lot of room for interactivity, but that's really cool how they do that. I love that they bring the kids up, and the kids have a blast. Every once in a while you get a shy one who just kind of stands around. But yeah, I love that Disney will bring, a child in a wheelchair up and make them really, it just makes their day. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's a fun show. It's very heartwarming. And so we're going to go from touching and heartwarming moments to man-eating aliens. Nice transition, Herb. So over to Alien Encounter. So do you remember the first time you experienced Alien Encounter?
I do. I think the year after it opened. I think it said it opened in 95. I went in 96 I want to, reveal my age, but I think everyone knows it anyway. I went with, after I graduated high school, I went with a couple high school, good friend of mine. We didn't do the senior week thing where we went and hung out on the beach or, party. We went to Walt Disney World where we could do rides for 10 days. But yeah, that we went, and I just couldn't believe that it was a Disney attraction, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I remember my first time too, and this was back in the days before the internet. So probably like a lot of folks, I didn't really know what to expect. I saw the warning signs.
Right.
I thought, well, it's in Tomorrowland. You know, what could it be? And it was just, it's hard to find words to describe it. Terrifying is maybe a little strong, but jolting, shocking, amazing. I think those are all words that come to mind the first time I saw it.
Shocking. Yeah, that's a perfect way to describe it. You didn't see that coming, but you walked over those doors.
So for folks who've never had the chance to experience Alien Encounter, it was an attraction in Tomorrowland. It was scary, which is not a word you would typically use to describe attractions, especially in the Magic Kingdom. And the idea was that this new company, or old company, I guess, XS Tech, was going to demonstrate this teleportation, and it was going to bring the founder in to visit the audience. But at the last minute, things change, and I think he was going to bring someone to him. At the last minute, he decided he was going to come, and then he made a last-minute change, and instead of this founder coming, the teleportation stream picks up an alien, and the alien is transported into the room with everyone. And so the story unfolds of what happens when the alien is in this room. And, you know, a lot of things happen. He's contained in a big cylinder. He breaks free. He's wandering around. And a lot of things happen as the alien wanders around. They're trying to get him back into the containment unit and out of there so you're safe. And so this was not a happy singing and dancing sort of moment. It was a scary attraction. And I think I made a big impression on a lot of people. And maybe when we get through the list, we'll talk about some of our ideas on maybe why it's not there anymore. But six memories from Alien Encounter. So, Phil, over to you for number one. What's your first recollection from that one?
Yeah, so just like you were just saying, the first thing that comes to my mind with that attraction was the actual alien audio animatronic that they used. It was scary. That he or she, whatever that alien was scary looking, scary sounding alien. It had, you know, wings and arms and this scary head. It was like a bug or something. I can't even explain what it was. And it was just a freaky looking thing. And because it was in the, you know, in the beginning when it, you know, the lights are on, off and on, and it's in the glass, the cylinder in the middle of the room, you don't ever get like a great look at it. It's like through smoke effects and the lights are in and out. And I think that made it even scarier that you didn't know exactly what you were dealing with. And it really interesting story about it was, supposed to be originally, I think, if you know, the internet rumors are true, Disney originally wanted it to be the alien from the movie Alien. And the room was supposed to be the space shuttle Nostromo from the movie. But then it realized it was a rated R movie, and it didn't want to be, you know, tied into a rated R movie at the Magic Kingdom. So they created their own, you know, to me, even more scary and frightening alien to put into the show. So yeah, that always left a big impression on me. Just seeing that, and then seeing it escape from the cylinder, it always kind of freaked me out.
Yeah, all points I agree with. So this was not an alien like Stitch, sort of lovable and blue and fuzzy. This was an alien with tentacles and screaming. And I think you're right that a lot of what made this attraction terrifying was the unknown. So you couldn't really get quite a glimpse of what that alien really looked like. And it was dark, so it was hard to see. And there were loud noises that were startling. But that alien was a freaky-looking creature, and not in a lovable kind of way at all. It was a scary way.
Yeah, he was. It's funny that you mentioned Stitch. He wasn't a lovable, huggable guy. He was definitely like... And what made it even scarier, too, was the... That, well, I have that later on. I don't want to say that. So go. But it was to wrap up the alien. He was freaky as could be.
Yep. All right, good. The alien, that made a big impression on me. That was number one. So number two, over to me. Actually taking a step back, one of the things that really made an impression for me of Alien Encounter was the pre-show. And just like today with Stitch's Great Escape, there are really sort of two different stages of the pre-show before you get into the main auditorium. So there's the first holding room, there was a video that played, and then there was the second one where you see the animatronic with poor Skippy, who's the test subject. And so the pre-show, I think, really set the tone for this kind of ominous thing that was about to happen, this idea of teleportation and a company that's going to push some limits and maybe do so in a dangerous way. So there was a lot of foreshadowing in the pre-show. I think the characters that were designed in the pre-show and just the makeup, the animatronics were all great in setting the stage and really a big part of the overall storytelling that took place.
Yeah, it's one of the more elaborate pre-shows Disney's done in recent, I mean, not recent really, but in the last 25 years. I mean, like you said, there's two different pre-shows. The first one, you have, like, you know, B-list actors, not, you know, you have Kevin Pollak in there on the video. You know, Clench, his name's Clench, right? I think it's played by Jeffrey Jones from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Mm-hmm. Tyra Banks is makes a little appearance in the video, so... You know, they went, you know, pretty all out to get some talent in there. And then, like you said, the second part of the pre-show where you have a robot, Sir. He's actually played by Tim Curry. I think it was Tim Curry, right? I originally was somebody else, and then Tim Curry took over.
Yeah.
I forget now who the original actor was. Yeah, just a really cool... You know, pulled out all the stops pre-show, and they really got you. The story was very well in place by the time you get to the actual theater for the show. Of course, as we already said, everything kind of goes haywire and doesn't go according to plan, but you had a very clear idea of what you're doing and where you are right after you get to the two pre-shows.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I think the pre-show is really done well. And I always remember sort of the fluid motions of Sir, the animatronic, when he's describing, you know, what if this experiment isn't just to teleport across the width of this room, but the breadth of a galaxy? And it was very dramatic.
Yeah.
And, really, really just set the stage for what was about to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it is Tim Curry, right? So he's a very dramatic dude.
Yeah.
So it worked out really well.
Yep. Okay, number two, amazing pre-show. So number three, Phil, back to you.
All right, so this was an effect in the show that really kind of just scared people, but also just made the whole experience real to me. Like, it was the alien at one point, he escapes from the cylinder, he's walking around the room, and they had these awesome, like, subwoofers in the floor that make it seem like this real heavy, you know, monster alien is walking around the room. And all of a sudden, he stops behind you, and you hear him breathing. And then you feel this, they have like this effect where this hot air, this hot breath gets sprayed right on the back of your neck. And the screams that would get from the crowd was just the greatest thing ever. I mean, it was, you really felt it there. It was there. It was on your back. And man, it's way better than the effect they do now in Stitch with Stitch breathing or burping the chili dog into your face, which a lot of people hate.
Yeah.
I, being the parent of little kids, they think that's hilarious. They think it's gross but hilarious, so it kind of makes me laugh. But yeah, that the alien breathing on you, man, every time I would go in after I had been there for the first time. Every time I wrote it after, well, not wrote, I guess experienced it, I would think that was the one moment in that attraction I was kind of like dreading, but also I couldn't wait for it. You know what I mean? It's like so cool, but kind of like scary at the same time.
Yeah, that's the time when you understand why Disney decided to put these harnesses over your chairs so people didn't jump out and run out of the room. Because that was an extremely, extremely creepy moment when you really felt like that alien was behind you and you could feel the effect of his breath on your neck. That was just an amazing point.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually now, like, chilled to talk about it.
Yeah. Number three, hot breathing on your neck, and not the good kind at all. Number four. All right, over to me. So something that really made an impression on me is the fact that this show was scary. We've alluded to that several times already, but it wasn't scary like Scary Moments with Snow White. It's scary like an R-rated thriller sort of movie. And I think that's something that really made an impression because it didn't really fit, I don't think, at Tomorrowland. We'll talk about that at another point, but it wasn't expected at a minimum. And so you're in the Magic Kingdom, you go into Tomorrowland, you're in this attraction, you kind of feel the tension building. But then when you're in the main theater and it is dark and there are these loud sounds and the lights go out and hot breathing on your neck, it truly all comes together in a very frightening experience. And that's something that I really remember. And so I'm not the kind of guy who likes scary movies. It's just not my thing. And I remember walking out of there kind of being shaken up by it. Not like, oh boy, I better go home and take some aspirin shaken up, but in a way that really has an effect. It has an effect on you.
Yeah, it really was like leaving. It was like leaving a horror movie at the movie theater. That's kind of what it was.
Yeah.
Like you walked out of there and you thought, like, man, that, I did not, you didn't expect, like you said, you didn't expect it. You didn't, it just, you're in complete darkness almost, you know, I would say 75% of the time. Like complete, can't even see anything in front of your face darkness. And they, one thing that was really cool and made it even scarier is, if people weren't screaming, they piped in screams from people, which really made it scary because they were louder than everybody else, and they're, you know, in your ear. And people, so you hear the regular guests that are experiencing with you screaming, and then you have these other terrifying, frightening screams for the people who are getting terrorized by the alien. And man, yeah, it was like leaving the movie Scream when you walk out of there. It really was. You were really weirded out. And to me, I loved that feeling. I like scary movies. But you're right. Just to fit into Tomorrowland, it probably wasn't the best, you know, match. Wasn't the best fit.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I remember that too, that yeah, if people weren't inclined themselves to scream, Disney was going to sort of jumpstart the process by piping in some screams to get people going. I remember that part of the show too.
Yeah, they weren't afraid to really make you feel a pain in there. It was intense.
It was intense, yep. All right, number four, truly scary. Number five, Phil, back to you.
Yeah, so I'm just going to kind of piggyback off that. Mine was just the feeling of how real it was, because and the technology at this point, if it was still there, I think it would still work, because it goes with that, you know, like almost like the Jaws kind of movie philosophy. That's kind of what it kind of worked. Like, you don't see all that much, you don't see the shark, so that's what makes it scary, and that's why it would still work. It felt like Jaws felt real. This feels real when you're in there, when you're in that room. You know, like I said, it's almost complete darkness. And then there's a moment where the lights go out, the alien escapes, and then there's a technician, like a maintenance worker, that comes in, and he's over your head in the room. He's like on the second floor of this room, and he's trying to fix the lights. And he has a flashlight, and it was really a well-done effect, because they had a real cast member up there with a flashlight, shining it down on the guests that were down below, but it was a recorded voice, so it was always the same technician's voice, and he would say, you know, is everybody okay down there? I'm going to work on getting the lights back on, and it felt like, yeah, there's really, this guy's up there, he's really a maintenance worker, and he's going to help us, and it freaked you out. Even though he was there to help you, you knew he wasn't going to be up for the job, and it just, oh, it was so cool, and it just felt like it was real, and it was just very, very well done, and I just love that about it, and it was hard to separate what was real from what was, you know, fake on that attraction.
Yeah, you really did get pulled into the story, and all of the effects and the darkness and the unknown, it all came together to really put you in that moment, and it felt like it was happening all around you.
Yeah, you kind of felt—I don't know—you felt kind of bad for yourself. If that makes any sense, you're like, I really shouldn't be involved in this right now. But even though it was, you knew deep down it wasn't real. You couldn't convince your brain of that in certain, parts of it.
Yep. Yeah. You really got sucked into that story. Definitely. All right. So number six actually sort of piggybacks on what you just mentioned, that you felt like it was real, and the poor maintenance worker up on the catwalk. So tell me if I'm remembering this right. I think he's up there trying to fix the lights. He's going to say, I'm going to help get you out of here. And then the alien comes and eats him. And I think when that happens, you get a spray from this poor guy getting chomped into pieces from the alien. So just like you had this physical effect of the breath of the alien on your neck, you get the effect of a spray, which, if you think about it, is really pretty disgusting. some poor guy just met his end, and you're kind of getting the back spray from it.
Yeah, the poor maintenance guy out there just doing his job with excess tech, trying to help you out, and he gets eaten by, you're exactly right, eaten by the, or at least mauled by the giant alien, and whatever fluid that he had inside of him, imagine whatever that is, I'm assuming it's blood, whatever else it could be, lands on your arms, legs, and face after he gets, taken apart by the alien. That moment was the, quintessential, whoa, moment of that attraction. It really was.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was trying to remember if I could recall an earlier, I'll call it a 3D sort of effect. So we're kind of used to those now. If you go to Mickey's PhilharMagic, there are parts where bubbles come out, or you see different sort of live effects in theaters now pretty regularly. And I was trying to recall if I had experienced some of those things before Alien Encounter. And it could well be that there were some out there, but I couldn't pinpoint any.
I don't remember. Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know. Maybe like little things, like you said, like there's bubbles in the, I think, Voyage of the Little Mermaid, right? When you're under the sea, or maybe there's a little spray, but nothing to that effect where it's just kind of, completely went along with the story so perfectly. That might have been one of the first ones.
Yeah, which I think just added to the shocking angle of it all.
Yeah, wasn't there a story like, was it Michael Eisner, he wrote it in previews, and then he deemed it was too scary, or was it not scary enough? I forget how that went.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but I could imagine he would have comments. I think everybody had comments.
Yeah, I think he did it, and it may have been, I forget now, I'm kicking myself because I'm looking at it this morning, but it was either he loved it or either way, it was either too intense or too, I'll have to look it up and let you know, but it was one or the other. It was either too scary or wasn't scary enough, and they closed it and they reopened it like a month later with either enhanced or dumbed down effects. I forget.
Yeah.
But he definitely didn't approve of the first version.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I can only imagine if it were too scary, what it was like then, because then maybe people were being brought out on stretchers or something. It was probably just knocking folks out.
Yeah, right.
Wow. So we've talked about how it was a little bit of a surprise. So what are your thoughts about Alien Encounter and its position in Tomorrowland? Was it a great experiment? Was it a big mistake? Should it have gone elsewhere? Kind of what are your feelings about Disney's decision to place Alien Encounter in Tomorrowland, now looking back with hindsight?
Yeah, I think I don't know if I would call it a mistake, because it definitely had its following and its fans. I mean, there are so many people like you and I right now, who look back on it and, are really impressed by the way, how everything worked together, the pre-shows with the actual show and how it flowed, and it told a complete story. And it, in so many ways, it was a fantastic Disney attraction. But in so many ways, it belonged somewhere else. Like, it didn't, because like you were saying, in that spot, in that building before, they were very family-friendly, very, fun and you know, ambitious and kind of attractions. And to put something in there, and people, I'm sure, didn't walk in there. They went in there thinking, you know, Mission to Mars. They didn't go in there thinking an alien was going to eat somebody right in front of them. So I think it may still have been here if it weren't for where it was placed. I think if it was, you know, if they had put it in Hollywood Studios, found a little spot for it there, I think maybe it would have worked and stayed a little bit longer than it did.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a different placement may have allowed that attraction to stick around a while longer. And I was thinking about the sort of attraction it was. So there are definitely thrilling attractions that Disney does. So Rock and Roller Coaster is thrilling. Summit Plummet is, I did that once, and that'll probably be the only time. I found that to be scary, but in a thrilling sort of way. But I found Alien Encounter to be thrilling in a frightening sort of way. And I can't really recall other frightening things that Disney does. Maybe a little bit around the Haunted Mansion, but definitely not on this level. Maybe around some of the stage shows at the Halloween party. But this seemed like it was almost in a class by itself, where it pushed some boundaries of spots that Disney didn't normally go, and I don't think does typically go in the theme parks. And it may have been an interesting time in Disney's history where they were switching up some of the things they were doing with motion pictures. I think they needed to shake up things a little bit. And so in that way, I almost saw it as something of an experiment where they wanted to say, let's try to do something different and do it in a different way. And it was very memorable. Even though I wasn't a scary movie kind of guy, I still really liked Alien Encounter. But it just seemed like its placement was maybe not the best spot. And maybe it was just a little bit too far outside the typical zone of what you would expect inside a Disney park.
Yeah, I think you hit it right in the head with that. And you're right. They were really ambitious, right? Like, they really tried to push the envelope and deliver something that they never had done before. And you're right, maybe they got a little too ambitious because, you know, they probably, to be honest with you, ruined a lot of six-year-olds' trips.
Yeah.
Went in there thinking, you know, it's going to be a fun ride with aliens to, you know, that's the first or second day of your trip. You know, trying to convince a six-year-old to get on something else after experiencing that might have been pretty difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And it really didn't matter how many signs you put out front, because I think people have an expectation of what's going to happen inside a Disney attraction. And, you know, you can put all the warning signs you want, but I don't think anybody walks into anything at Walt Disney World and expects to get terrified like you would be on Alien Encounter.
Right. No, and I think the same way about, you know, when they had Snow White's Scary Adventure and you know, it's still out in Disneyland, and they had Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, which aren't, you know, as an adult, you ride it, and you're like, oh, it's nothing. And there are signs that tell you with Snow White's Scary Adventure that there are scary scenes. And people don't think about it. And, you know, just because it's Disney, like you said, and you take your child on one of those, and it's kind of freaky. And then, you're, you know, if they're not prepared for it, what we do now is my oldest rode Tower of Terror and Splash Mountain last trip for the first time, and she loved both of them. But we had shown her the YouTube videos several times before we did it, so she would know exactly what to expect. And I told her, yeah, your stomach's going to feel a little weird when you drop in Tower of Terror. But there was no YouTube, you know, back when Alien Encounter first premiered. So you weren't able to show anybody what it was going to be. And, yeah, I have to imagine that freaked a lot of little kids out. So I'm sure that's one of the reasons it's not, you know, that it's been replaced by the lovable and smelly Stitch.
And that is a good point. I think today, if Disney had tried to do something like an Alien Encounter, people just by nature of YouTube and the internet would have much more of an idea of what they were getting into. But back in 95, yeah, when the world was not on the internet, people were pretty much going in with no expectation unless they had some word of mouth. And so it was a complete surprise. And I think that added to the depth of the scariness of what happened there.
Yeah, you're right about that. And, they're not going to, I just don't think Disney is ever going to push the envelope just as much as they did with this one. I don't think ever again, just because I think, you know, it was, you know, short-lived, 9 years, I guess. It's not really short-lived, but, yeah, it was 8 years. I didn't exactly have the same power that they thought I had to do the entire public void. But just real quick, I looked it up, and Eisner wrote it and said it wasn't intense enough. So that's why it went back down, and then they amped up the intensity. Just to clear that up.
Oh, interesting. Okay, good. Well, at least we can rest assured that, you know, they didn't have to tone it down because people were having heart attacks inside.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't Halloween Horror Nights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and
which
I think
I'll never do.
No, me either. No way. Forget it.
I pretend that I have like a medical problem when people ask me to go there. I'm like, I can't do the strobe lights. I the inner ear thing. I can't do it. I don't like being scared in person. I never did. So like that, those the Halloween Horror Nights thing. I could never do it. I could never walk through there and not act like a three-year-old, you know, child the entire time. I'd be screaming and sweating and no thanks.
Yeah, I think that real life is scary enough. I don't need to go and pay for other scares on top of it. So.
Yeah, right?
And I think you're right that Disney probably learned a lesson here. So I think they learned, number one, don't put toilet paper on top of Cinderella Castle. And I think they learned, don't make extremely scary attractions in the Magic Kingdom. So I think there were lessons learned by all. All right, this was a fun conversation. Top six memories from, I'm going to try it again, extraterrestrial alien encounter. Number one.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Number one, alien animatronic. Two, the amazing pre-show. Three, hot breathing on your neck. Number four, the truly scary nature of the show. Number five, the feeling that it was really happening. And number six, getting sprayed. Nice look back at a scary time in Disney history.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It's fun to talk about this stuff. Especially stuff that, you know, it's not around anymore, and it's nice to take it like a trip back and experience it, kind of, you know, through stories and stuff. It's a good time.
Yeah, it is. So, Phil, you are the owner and operator at Ear to Their Travel, a Disney specialized travel agency and my recommended travel provider. So thanks for all that you do to help people plan their Disney trips. If folks are interested in getting in touch with you to learn more about how that works, how can they do that?
Sure, thanks, Herb. You can go over to eartothertravel.com. That's where my, you know, my request to quote is, my blog, I have a podcast over there now. That's where everything is. You can also go find me on any of the social media platforms. I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/eartothertravelagency. And I'm also on Twitter and Instagram. Just kind of look me up, look up Ear to Their Travel or Phil from Ear to Their Travel on there. So that's where you can find me.
Phil, thanks for joining me today.
Herb, thank you, and thanks for your website and for having me a big part of it. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you see, there you have it. A little glitch here and there, but I think you get the idea. The potential of excess technology and all of that. We certainly apologize for any inconvenience, but after all,
it does take time to seize the future.
Good point.
Thank you so much for coming. Please exit out the open doors and don't forget your belongings.
The ones that haven't been eaten.
Yes, we have made it through the list of the top six memories from extraterrestrial alien encounter, but our conversation isn't over. What do you think about our list? You can add to it by visiting the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/84, a page that works nicely on tablets, desktops, and smartphones. Leave your comments in the comments section and check out what other people are saying as well. I'd like to thank everyone who's been in touch and invite you to get in touch with me too. A great way to do that is by following me on Facebook, facebook.com/worldofwalt. If you enjoyed today's podcast, it would be great if you would spread the word. Tell your family and your friends. I'd like to give you a heartfelt thank you for spending your time with me today, and I'd also like to thank everyone who visits the World of Walt website. There you can find interesting articles and chat with other folks who enjoy Disney in the comments sections and in the forum. By listening here, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you, and that is very cool. Thank you for being a part of it. So, until next time, my friend, may God bless you.
There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away. So there's a great big beautiful tomorrow.
shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.